giving you a behind-the-scenes look of Smashville's team. This is Brett's Insiders with Adam Vingan and Willie Donig. Smashville lives here on 102.5 The Game and the Game Nashville Sports Network.
Brett's Insiders on 102.5 The Game. Adam Vingan and Willie Donig here with you on Wednesday evening. A special hello to all of you leaving Smashville Live with Cole Smith and Michael McCarron. Yet another entertaining episode of Smashville Live. And Willie and I will take you on for the next hour as we talk more Predators. Unfortunately for the local professional hockey team, Willie, they lost last night at home 5-3 to the Buffalo Sabres, a game that appeared over early in the second period when the Sabres took a 4-0 lead. A valiant effort to get back into the game by the Predators. Two goals from Ryan O'Reilly, a goal from Philip Forsberg as well. But Peyton Krebs scores an empty net goal late in the third period to squash any comeback attempt for the Predators. They lose 5-3. And Willie, this game was lost really in the first period. The Sabres dominant in the first period. Whether you were just watching the game, looking at the numbers, it was completely one-sided for the Sabres to start that game yesterday.
And Andrew Burnett said that after the game, that unfortunately, they just couldn't dig out of that hole. They did lose the game in the first period, and then you could carry it over into the first couple minutes of the second period when you get to it. And it was really a bizarre thing to watch because it's the first time they've lost two games in a row in almost 2 months. When you think about it, it was November 22nd and 24th, the low point of the season. That's the last time they lost two in a row. But when you boil it down, it was basically two periods plus where it was an absolute cave-in. It's like they completely lost all bearings for that minute. We did the math last night after the game on our broadcast. They were outscored 11-1 in a span of 47 minutes. They led at Vegas 1-0 with 3 minutes to go. They were playing great. They had held Vegas without a shot for 12 minutes, had a 1-0 lead, had Luke Evangelista on a power play break his stick with a wide open net. If he buries it, they're up 2-0. They had other chances to go up 2-0. And you're thinking, wow, this could be really something special. Then all of a sudden, they give up goals on back-to-back shots to end the second period in Vegas. They completely cave in the third period, lose 7-2. And then they come out with this really poor first period last night against Buffalo. The next thing you know, they've been outscored 11-1 in just over two periods. And then they flipped the switch, and they pretty much dominated the Sabres from that point on in the game. And I think the Sabres probably walked out of there feeling pretty fortunate that they were able to hold the lead. I thought Nashville had lots of chances to get tied and maybe take that game to overtime.
Philip Forsberg had some pretty harsh comments for his team's performance after the game last night, reading from our friend Robbie Stanley's recap on NHL.com. Quote, "We didn't move. We didn't work. We didn't compete. They were faster, stronger. They won puck battles. It was pretty simple. We had a choice to make going into the second. It was either quit or actually start trying." End quote.
Yeah, they just got lost in the weeds there for that period. It was hard to figure out what happened. From the Sabres' point of view, I think the matchup that really hurt Nashville, the Sabres are a very intriguing team, Adam, that we've talked about a lot over the last couple of seasons because they are the cautionary tale of the rebuild because they've had to start and restart a rebuild for a long time, but it finally does look like they're starting to see the pieces come together. They put that really young line out there last night where they moved Zach Benson down to the third line with two very young players who, quite honestly, I had never really watched closely, but they're both highly touted prospects, Noah Östlund and a guy in his second NHL game, Konsta Helenius, and they dominated the first period. They're out there for three goals, and that was the line that Nashville probably didn't prepare to have to match up with, and they got exploited big time. But that's what Buffalo has right now. They've got a little extra skill. They're still the youngest group out there in the league. They have been for the last couple of years, but they're now starting to get some traction. So that's a dangerous team. And by the time Nashville started to do the things that they do well, it was too late.
It's a tough start to a critical homestand for the Predators. They host the Ottawa Senators tomorrow and the Utah Mammoth on Saturday in a big Central Division matchup. Despite the past couple of losses, the Predators are 17-10 since November 26th. That's a .630 points percentage, which ranks 11th in the NHL, which is still quite impressive. And last week was, as we discussed on our afternoon show, Willie, I thought last week was a huge week for the Predators because they were playing three of the top teams in the Western Conference. Three teams that if the Predators find a way to make the playoffs, one of those three teams, Edmonton, Colorado, or Vegas, is most likely to be their first round opponent. They defeated the Oilers in overtime, and that's been an incredibly hard thing to do for the Predators, defeat the Oilers in any form or fashion. They do that. They go to Colorado. They hand Colorado its first regulation loss of the season at home. And that was not a fluky game. The Predators, I thought, played incredibly well in that environment. They held their own against the Avalanche and handed the Avalanche their first regulation loss at Ball Arena. And then on the second half of a back-to-back, I guess you could call it a quote-unquote schedule loss, going to Vegas. Vegas is rolling right now. And as you laid out, it got away from the Predators at the end of that game. To come home and lose to Buffalo, it's a disappointment. And it just goes to show you, Willie, just how thin the Predators' margin for error is, despite the fact that they have been playing considerably better over the past 2 months than they did the first month of the season.
That is the reality, is when you start 6-12-4, every time you lose, you probably sit there and go, oh man, is this hill too big to climb? So you have to stay steady and just keep the mentality that has gotten them to this point, and that is win the week. And they still have an opportunity to win the week if they can come back and play well, albeit against two very intriguing teams, very good teams that are somewhat similar to Buffalo in that they've not had a lot of success in recent years. They've gone through rebuilds. They've got high-skilled young players that still haven't won a lot in the league, but they have a lot of ability and a lot of speed. And quite honestly, it was the speed of the Sabres that Nashville wasn't able to handle early. Once they flipped it, it looked like Nashville was the dominant team. So what are you going to see tomorrow against a team like Ottawa, who has been under the microscope? They're getting criticized. But if you look at their record, Ottawa is a team that's got a better points percentage than the Predators. They've got talent. They're behind several teams in that really crowded East. But the East has only one team that's under 500. It's the Rangers. Everybody else in that conference is above 500. And then Utah, I think, has really surged. If you look at their underlying numbers, which I know you do, Adam.
I do.
They look like a playoff team.
They do.
They look like a team that should make the playoffs. So two very intriguing matchups that on paper, the fans are going to be saying, well, you know, you got Ottawa and Utah. You're playing them at home. But the reality is Ottawa and Utah present a lot of really good challenges here.
Utah, by the way, 7-1-1 since January 1st. That's the second best points percentage in the NHL this calendar year, behind only the Tampa Bay Lightning, who are 8-0-1 since January 1st.
And Buffalo is now 16-3-1 in their last 20. So if you've been sleeping on Buffalo, they've been as good as anybody for the last few months.
The Sabres trying to end the longest playoff drought in NHL history. It's been, what, 15 years?
I think this is the 15th year. I think the last 14 they have missed.
Yes. So the Sabres, they were surging heading into Nashville last night, and they walk away with a 5-3 win against the Predators. It was a rare, at least recently, off night for UC Saros. 4 goals allowed on 19 shots in roughly 24 minutes of action. He gets the hook. Eustace Onanen comes in. doesn't give up a goal in relief, 13 saves on 13 shots. And this is self-explanatory, but UC Saros is going to have to be a big part of this if the Predators are going to continue this push and make the playoffs. I thought Barry Trotz said it well on our show yesterday, Willie, that UC Saros during this stretch since around Thanksgiving, he's been making those key saves. I think Trotz used an old quote from Grant Fuhr. It's not how many saves you make, it's when you make them. And UC Saros, for the past 2 months, has been doing that. When the Predators need that key save, he's been making it. We've talked about the number of steals he's recorded over the past 2 months. He's up there in the league leaderboard, but last night just wasn't his night.
I don't put it on him last night. I thought that it was the defense that broke down in a lot of ways. It may not be may not have been his best night, but it has sort of defined that it falls in line with what we've seen really with both goalies. But Saros, of course, gets the workload unlike any other goalie. He's right up there at the top with Vemelka, and before he got hurt, Shesterkin. You know, he's going to get a lot of starts. So Saros' season, when it seems to go poorly for the team, it seems like he's had, I don't know, 5 to 7 or 8 starts where the numbers really don't look good at all. He just gets knocked out, right? Or he ends up at the end of the night giving up 5 or 6, and it just ruins his stats. But then in the other games, like you said, he's got, what, 9 steals, I think, which is towards the top of the league. He's won 5 games, I think, 2-1. So he has been the reason they've won more often than not. So the good outweighs the bad. But when you look at the stats, it still isn't super impressive in terms of the ranking. But I think he's probably played better than you realize for that reason.
UC Saros has 9 steals on the season, according to SportLogic, second most in the NHL to Ilya Sorokin, who has 11.
And Sorokin might be an MVP candidate.
He absolutely should if the Islanders make the playoffs.
Yeah, not
he
just
has
the Vezina.
Been sensational.
He should win the Vezina going away right
yes.
now if he stays on this track, but he could be in the MVP conversation. And just to get in that conversation, when you're talking about Connor McDavid and Macklin Celebrini and Nathan MacKinnon, like the usual suspects that are there every year, the fact that a goalie gets into this conversation is very significant.
Yes, especially since Connor Hellebuyck won the MVP last year. It was the first time in quite a while, at least 10 years, I think,
when
Carey Price won the MVP.
Yeah,
so goaltenders rarely win MVP awards. I think a lot of people just consider the Vezina Trophy the MVP for goaltenders. So when a goaltender actually wins the Hart Trophy, that's a big deal. Coming up next on Preds Insiders, it will be a special night in Smashville tomorrow when the Predators host the Ottawa Senators, as one player in particular celebrates an incredible milestone. We will discuss that coming up next. Adam Vingan and Willie Donick, this is Preds Insiders 102.5 The Game. Preds Insiders 102.5 The Game. Adam Vingan and Willie Donick here with you this evening. The Predators are back in action tomorrow night at home against the Ottawa Senators. A 7 o'clock puck drop, 6 o'clock pregame, as always, right here on 102.5 The Game. And tomorrow night at Bridgestone Arena, Willie, that was easy for me to say. I almost completely tripped over my tongue there. Tomorrow at Bridgestone Arena, Willie, will be Roman Josi's 1,000th NHL game. And it's just hard to believe that we're already there. Roman Josi made his NHL debut on November 26th, 2011, at the Detroit Red Wings. He played 12 minutes, 20 seconds. And now fast forward to tomorrow, when he is expected to take the ice for his 1,000th NHL game. The first Predators player to play all 1,000 games with the organization. Second place on the list, David Legwand, 956 career games with the Predators. Philip Forsberg, 829. Shea Weber, 763. Martin Erat, 723. Those are the top 5 leaders in franchise history in most games played. But we've both gotten to know Roman Josi over the years. You still call his games. I covered him for more than 7 years. I voted for him to win the Norris Trophy at least once. And I just think that the way that he has represented the organization, the way he's made his mark on the ice, it's been truly fun to watch. And one thing that you and I have been saying to each other recently, Willie, especially as the Predators have been winning more consistently, we've been starting to see that Roman Josi, the perennial Norris Trophy candidate, emerge over these past several games. The way he's able to attack up the ice, the way he's able to break down defenses. There are few defensemen in the NHL, even at Roman Josi's quote-unquote advanced age. Even though he's dealt with injuries, he still has an ability to generate offense from the back end that few defensemen in the NHL have. So, an incredibly special moment for Roman Josi and Predators fans tomorrow.
Yeah, where to start with the career arc of Roman Josi? It's amazing. I thought Barry Trotz said it well yesterday on our show, Adam, that he's been so great for so long, and he's not a guy that calls a lot of attention to himself. You almost take for granted how great he's been. I wonder sometimes if the fans really realize what he has meant, because for a lot of his career, he was overshadowed by guys like Shea Weber and PK Subban just for different reasons, right? But Roman Josi was always right in there as a great player. And of course, there was still Ryan Ellis and Matthias Ekholm. There were so many great defensemen on the Predators that Roman Josi has, because he's been there so long, he's passed by all those guys in all of the categories. So it's a remarkable career. I think it's a Hall of Fame career, especially if he continues to produce. Like you said, it's been great to watch the last few weeks as his game is starting to really get back into form. And I'm curious what that's going to mean for the team, because he's a guy that when he's playing well, he makes everybody on the team better. I think the coaching staff deserves credit too, that they have tweaked his game a little bit to try to keep him aging well. They're asking him not to do too much individually now, get the puck up the ice and then jump in there. He's learned how to do that. So I think kind of like Steven Stamkos, he's adapting his game as he gets older and he can still be really effective. So it's going to be a special night. He's going to hit 1,000 on Thursday, and then the ceremony, I believe, will be Saturday after it's official. So it's kind of a two-game celebration.
Roman Josi won the Norris Trophy in 2020. That is not the season. He had 96 points. He finished second in Norris Trophy voting the year he had 96 points. He came.
I don't even want to talk
second
about the voting of that one. I think he should have won it that year, but
don't even
get me started on Shea Weber a few years before that.
I'm not trying to bring back bad memories here. I'm looking at the voting total from the year he finished second to Cale Makar. It was as tight as could be. Roman Josi actually had more first-place votes than Cale Makar.
And there were some pretty famous/infamous voters that did not have Josi in the top three, if I recall.
But he was outstanding that season. And here's the way I've described Roman Josi's game recently, Willie. The number of offensive defensemen, quote-unquote, the number of offensive defensemen who I would take on my team over Roman Josi, that list has grown in recent years, but it's a pretty small list still. Quinn Hughes, Cale Makar. It depends on how you're going to have to try to map out some of these younger defensemen's career, like Lane Hutson in Montreal or Matthew Schaefer.
Yeah, there's some great young defensemen.
Yes.
It's like Barry Trotz said, there's an evolution to the game. Everybody's always innovating. There's always young people that are coming up that have learned things. So it is natural that that's going to happen.
Yes. But the list, again, the list of defensemen who play a similar role on their teams as Roman Josi, the list of defensemen who I would take on my team over Roman Josi, I can probably count on one hand, maybe two, but it's a short list is what I'm saying. Even at, he's what,
35?
Yeah. Even at 35, he is still a high-end offensive generator from the back end.
And our fingers are crossed that he can, you know, especially with the actual diagnosis of the POTS, coupled with all that he's been through with the wear and tear, the hits, the physicality, let's hope that allows him to continue to be productive all the way to the end of his career, whenever that is. He's got two more years after this on that long contract he signed. But I would say, you know, as those contracts go, he has been a really good bang for your buck. Not that, you know, not that that's everything, but it does, because it's a salary cap league. You definitely get judged by what's your production based on what is the team investing in you. And I mean, his, the investment in him, we haven't even gotten into just what a good guy he is, just yes. a classy guy.
Mm-hmm.
And Barry Trotz was just glowing about that part of it yesterday. Barry Trotz was his coach when he first came into the league, saw yes. him at the beginning, and now he's seeing him on the other side of his career, watched him, competed against him for all those years in between.
It is remarkable just to see how Roman Josi has evolved over the course of his career on the ice, but off the ice as well. When I first got to Nashville in 2015, you know, he was still early in his career. I think you used a good word earlier. He was sort of overshadowed. He was coming up. He was Shea Weber's partner. You know, there was a lot of intrigue in Roman Josi. How good could he be? And he was so soft-spoken. And, you know, over the course of the time that I covered him, you could tell that he was getting more comfortable in his skin. He was becoming more captainly every year, until the point where the Predators actually named him captain. And when they did, after Mike Fisher retired, it only made sense for Roman Josi to become the captain. Like, he was ready for that. I know it came down to Roman Josi and Ryan Ellis, but Josi was made for that. And, you know, what I appreciate about Roman Josi from a personal standpoint is, you know, I stopped covering the team. I wasn't really around for a couple of years. And when I've been back around now, it's like, you know, and I talked to Roman Josi, it's like I never really left. Like, he is such a good person. And I'm really happy for him. There aren't very many. There are only three, I think, players still on the team who I covered: Roman Josi, Philip Forsberg, and UC Saros. That's it. Mm. And, you know, I'm really happy for him. He's such a good person, such a great representative of the organization. And I think Predators fans, I think I speak for all of them when I say how great of an honor it is that he will play his 1,000th game tomorrow.
And I have a lot of faith that this is going to happen. What popped into my head was, and it's slightly different set of circumstances, but Jonathan Toews went back to play against the Blackhawks
that
for the
was
first
awesome,
time,
by the way.
And
that
boy,
reaction.
Did they ever do it right.
It was like three or 4 minutes
and
of a standing ovation.
Like, Toews finally had to say, look, we've got to get this game going. Yes. I appreciate it. But boy, they really showered him. So I hope that you get that as best as possible in Smashville the next couple nights, because let's not take for granted just how great this guy has been for as long as it's been. He's been the captain now for 9 years.
That's crazy.
Adam. And so the years start. He's been a captain longer than any other captain in Predators history, too. And I think that snuck up on me. And it's not even close, really. I think Shea Weber is the next closest. And this says a lot about Roman Josi. Remember, Mike Fisher was the captain. He retired and then came back the next year, halfway through the season, to join up with the team that was going to win the President's Trophy. Roman Josi was a first-year captain. He offered the captaincy back to Mike Fisher just out of respect. And Mike Fisher was like, no, you're the captain now. So it has been such an amazing thing to watch Roman Josi. And so don't take it for granted.
Shea Weber was captain of the Predators for 6 seasons between 2010 and 2016. 1 year of Mike Fisher, Roman Josi became captain of the Predators in 2017, which is just crazy to think about. So on behalf of Willie and I, congratulations to Roman Josi on reaching this milestone, which he is expected to do tomorrow at Bridgestone Arena, where the Predators will host the Ottawa Senators. Coming up next on Preds Insiders, there was a trade in the NHL earlier this week featuring a former Predators player that I found fascinating, and it got me wondering about the values of Predators players on the trade market. I also want to address some comments that Barry Trotz made on our program about one player in particular. We'll do that coming up next. Adam Vingan and Willie Donick. This is Preds Insiders 102.5 The Game.
The thing that makes him a really good player is the fact that, you know, he really wasn't drafted. He wasn't, you know, expected to even make it. And all of a sudden he's had great success in a couple teams. He's been playoff MVP. He's won a Stanley Cup. So there's a lot of that. He still has terrific hands. He's still a hard guy in those tough areas. So we just got to get him in feeling it again, get him caught up, and then try to, you know, hopefully we get some chemistry with the right people. And I know he can produce. I keep talking about it. You get him with the right people, he's going to produce at a real high rate. That's why, you know, even when there's talks of me, moving Marchie, if he goes to a team that has a couple people that are the right fit for him, he's going to get 30 goals every year. And he's still got a lot of good hockey on him.
That was Predators GM Barry Trotz on DVD yesterday talking about Jonathan Marchessault. And we will get to Marchessault because I thought he had some really interesting comments answering a question from you, Willie, just about where he fits in all of this right now. But earlier this week, there was a trade featuring a former Predators player who I know a lot of you still like, Kiefer Sherwood. Kiefer Sherwood was traded by the Vancouver Canucks to the San Jose Sharks for basically 2 second round picks. There was a minor league defenseman in the deal, but really it's 2 second round picks, one in 2026 and one in 2027. And my first thought when I saw that trade, Willie, was, I wonder if the Predators could get that for Michael Bunting. And Michael Bunting and Kiefer Sherwood, they're roughly the same age. They play the same position. They go about the game much differently. Sherwood is a straight line, heavy forechecker, lays the body. He's a heat-seeking missile out there. Michael Bunting, much more of an agitator, net front presence, things like that. But the fact that they're both 30-something wingers, I wondered if that could set the market for Michael Bunting. And it just got me wondering about, once again, what the Predators should do ahead of the NHL trade deadline, which is the beginning of March. But keep in mind that the NHL is shutting down for basically the entire month of February for the Olympics. So there aren't a ton of games between now and the NHL trade deadline. Excuse me, I don't have the number of Predators games in front of me. But the comments about Marchessault are interesting, Willie, because it's not the first time that Barry Trotz has said, I've got to get him playing with the right center. He hasn't played with Ryan O'Reilly. And it looks, and you tell me if I'm wrong here, it looks like he's not going to get the opportunity to play with Ryan O'Reilly. He has primarily played with Erik Haula as his center all season long. The opposite winger has shifted. Sometimes it's been Philip Forsberg. Sometimes it's been Steven Stamkos. But it's really been Marchessault with Haula all season long. And if Trotz doesn't think that he can put Marchessault in the position to succeed, it does make me wonder if the best possible option is to try to move him to one of those teams that he referenced in that clip, saying, hey, if someone gets him with the right players, he's going to score 30 goals. I don't think that's happening here. So what did you make of all of that with Marchessault yesterday?
I think, number one, they have to get Jonathan Marchessault playing his best hockey. And if the players he's playing with keep him from getting to be a 35 or 38 goal scorer, whatever it is, right? I don't know if I would ever consider him a, quote, 40-goal scorer. He has scored 40 goals in a season. He did right before he came to the Predators. But I've always looked at him as a guy through the years that is going to play his role on a winning team. And most years, that's a 25, maybe 30 type of goal scorer. And I think Barry Trotz still feels like he can be that player if he's on the right team. But this particular team, I think it's more of a question of, like we just talked about with Roman Josi, adapting his game. The best players can adapt and still find ways to help their team win, even if they have to do it a little differently than they've done before. Steven Stamkos is the best example of that. I would love to see a little bit of that in Marchessault, because the fact of the matter is, there is clearly a shortage of centers in the league. So unless there's a team that, and there might be that team, that just needs the right guy to put in their top six with a dynamic center, Marchessault could be very attractive to them. But as long as he's on the Predators, to get his stock right, I think I'd like to see Jonathan Marchessault continue to adapt and find ways to help the team win. He's only a couple games off of a long injury stint, so you've got to be realistic and give him a little time. He hasn't looked good in either of the two games yet. You could tell how badly he wants to help. But I'm curious what he looks like as you get closer. Like, can he get his game in a good spot before the Olympic break? Because then there's that whole break, and then you got to come back on the other side. So I don't know what it's going to look like for Marshall. So he also has no trade protection.
Yeah. And I was reminded earlier of our conversations with Sportsnet's Elliot Freeman last season when we were talking about Jonathan Marchessault. And he talked about how Marchessault's preference would be to go to a team in a no-tax state, because Marchessault has never played for a team that's not in a no-tax state, because he started his career with the Lightning and Panthers. Then he went to the Golden Knights, and now he's on the Predators. So he's never played for a team that requires him to pay state income tax. And I don't know if that still exists. That is something to consider. But look, we've had this conversation on our show many, many times. How conflicted I have been feeling about watching the Predators win more consistently, and what it means for the long term. And I'm not a betting man, Willie. I have actually never placed a legitimate sports bet in my life. But I know that you have to play the percentages. And if the Predators make the playoffs, they are going to do so as a wild card team. They are not going to catch the top three teams in the Central: Colorado, Minnesota, Dallas, in whichever order. They're not going to catch those teams. I've got a trivia question for you, Willie. The NHL established its current playoff format in 2013-14. There have been 10 full postseasons in that format. I'm excluding the two COVID-impacted postseasons in 2019-20 and 2020-2021, because those had different formats. So under the wild card format, 10 postseasons since 2013-14. How many wild card teams have reached the Stanley Cup final in those 10 non-COVID postseasons?
Well, the Predators are one.
They are.
I'm going to say there might be two more.
There is one more.
Only one more.
The 2022-2023 Florida Panthers. Those are the only...
Oh, right.
Those
beat the Boston Bruins in the first round.
Correct. Yeah. Those are the only two wild card teams that have reached the Stanley Cup final in this playoff format over 10 non-COVID impacted postseasons. So that's what? 40 potential wildcard teams. Two have made the playoffs. Those aren't great odds.
Two have made the Stanley Cup finals.
Yes. Thank you for correcting
me. I'm sure there's others that have won a round or two.
Yes.
But I would contend, look, I look at it differently than a lot of people. I am not one of these guys that says you have to win the Stanley Cup or else it's not a good season. I think when you make the playoffs, it's a good season. I think if you win a round or two in the playoffs, that's a really good season. And then the trick is getting in the mix enough with a team that can win it. And you hope that you're fortunate enough to have everything go right, or you're that good, or both, and you win the whole thing. So it is definitely something you can tell is on Barry Trotz's mind every week that we have him on, right? Assessing what is happening with the team playing well, but also being realistic about what you're pointing out.
And I also thought it was a telling answer yesterday from Barry Trotz. I asked him if he's had any substantive contract talks with the pending UFAs, Michael Bunting, Eric Halla, Michael McCarron, and Cole Smith. And he said no. And in part of his answer, he talked about the reality of the Predators situation. They're not in the playoffs right now. They're trying to get younger. So that also says to me, if we're in late January, the deadline's going to be here sooner rather than later, and you haven't had real contract talks with these guys, I think you got to think about shipping them out. And we had Elliot Freeman on the show last week. You weren't in that day, Willie. But he brought up, unprompted, Michael McCarron, because we asked him about Bunting and Halla specifically, but he brought up McCarron. He said, I'm surprised you didn't ask about McCarron, because he thinks that there would be plenty of interest in
huge
Michael
interest.
McCarron
huge
around the NHL, and not just huge interest because he's a huge man. But Michael McCarron, some of you may hear that and go, Michael McCarron? What? Why would teams want to trade for Michael McCarron? Well, he does a lot of things that GMs like. First of all, he's big. You can't teach that. He's big. He stands up for himself and his teammates. He's a good face-off winner. He plays tough minutes, defensive minutes. I think you could get more than you actually realize for Michael McCarron in a trade.
Oh, I think there's no question about it. And you left out one very important part.
And what's that?
He makes $900,000.
That too.
And so any team that has salary cap concerns, that's not a concern. They can fit that. And like you said, that is enormous bang for your buck, what you get with Michael McCarron. Because just to illustrate what you're talking about, he takes a lot of faceoffs and wins them. He wins them in the defensive zone, oftentimes against the other team's top players. So he is, in a playoff series, if he's out there against Sidney Crosby or Nathan MacKinnon or Connor McDavid, yeah, you always like the matchup if you're the team that has Connor McDavid, but Michael McCarron can hold his own for a fourth-line center against guys like that. Andrew Brunette uses him that way. So that's really valuable in a playoff series. And as you said, the physicality, he's a great team guy.
Mm-hmm.
He is a great locker room guy. He's a leader. He's a guy you love having on your team. So he's got tangible qualities and intangible, and he's really cheap. So for all those reasons, I think you could easily get a second-round pick, if not a second-round pick and something else for McCarron. I think all of these guys that you're talking about that you just listed would be very attractive deadline pickups for teams because they have specific roles that they do well. A guy like Michael Bunting or a guy like Eric Halla, they've been through it. They've been the trade deadline guy. So they've gone through the process. That's probably attractive to somebody say, well, this guy I know can come in and be a part of our team because he's done it before. They've been the great hired guns. So there's value in all of these guys. And Barry Trotz has tough decisions to make as he tries to assess where the team's going.
Coming up next to wrap up Preds Insiders, Willie and I are going to look at the Western Conference wildcard race. And we are going to determine how many of the teams challenging the Predators for those wild card spots are legitimate. We will do that coming up next. Adam Bingen, Willie Donick, this is Preds Insiders 102.5 The Game. Preds Insiders 102.5 The Game. Adam Bingen and Willie Donick here with you. The Predators are back in action tomorrow night against the Ottawa Senators at Bridgestone Arena. A 7 p.m. puck drop, 6 p.m. pregame right here on 102.5 The Game. The Utah Mammoth come to town on Saturday before the Predators head out on a northeastern road trip next week, Tuesday in Boston, Thursday in New Jersey, next Saturday on Long Island against the Islanders. And Willie, as we look at the Western Conference wild card race, the Predators are 3 points out of the final wild card spot in the Western Conference behind the San Jose Sharks. And I'm looking at a group of six teams here. These are the teams I'm really considering as the challengers for those wild card spots. Anaheim, which at the moment is in third place in the Pacific Division, Anaheim, Utah, San Jose, Los Angeles, Seattle, and Nashville. Those are the teams I'm looking at. I'm not really considering Calgary right now or even Chicago. Winnipeg has been playing better as of late, but they're still a little bit out of it.
Winnipeg's the team that I would still keep in the mix.
Okay, we can throw Winnipeg in the mix.
I think they are a team that's done too well for too long, and they have Hellebuck. I could see them ripping off 8 in a row.
That's totally
fair. I'm not checking them as
I will include them. You have convinced me. I will include the Jets. Do you agree that we can put aside the Flames and Blackhawks?
Yes. I think the Flames have already made their move
by trading Rasmus
Anderson. I think they have had the reality check. I think the Blues are close. I think with the injuries they've had, I think they do some really good things, but they I think have seen the writing on the wall for this year. It just hasn't gone well like it did last year. And they've got some guys that are banged up. They've got some guys who are attractive pieces. I think they're sort of set. And we know Vancouver's set.
Yes. So, okay, let's make it 7. Anaheim, Utah, San Jose, Los Angeles, Seattle, Nashville, and Winnipeg. Of those 7 teams, how many do you feel are legitimate wild card contenders? I'll give you an example on one that I'm not so sure on. Anaheim. Anaheim got off to a really good start. It looked like the Ducks had finally arrived. All of these young players. They had some really strong veterans in the mix. Jacob Trouba, Chris Kreider, Mikael Granlund, right? Among others. But they have tailed off, no pun intended, considerably over the past few weeks. It feels like maybe...
However,
yes,
after hitting rock bottom, they have
won four in a row
to get back up into the
third
spot of the
Pacific. See, this is a hard exercise.
It is a very hard exercise.
This is a hard exercise.
That's why.
I'm just not sure... I think Anaheim might not be ready for prime time yet. I think they'll hang around. I'm just not sure the Ducks are ready for prime time yet. But which of these teams, of those 7 we listed, do you consider legitimate contenders for these wild card spots?
For the I think that's one thing that we have to keep in mind is in the Central, you're pretty much blocked from anything except for a wild card.
Correct.
Because of the strength of the top 3 teams. In the Pacific, that third spot is there for the taking for somebody. You just mentioned the Ducks have been bad for a month. Now they have a little bit of a resurgence, and they're back into that third place spot, which is where they've been most of the year. So I agree with you. There are still question marks as to whether they, quote, know how to win and can take it all the way for 82 games. But I think they're in the mix. And they have 2 places to land, right? The teams in the Pacific could land in the third place spot, which is automatic, or one of the wild card spots. So I think the Sharks are another team that have been, and I thought Barry Trotz used a really good word for them, accelerator. The acceleration of Macklin Celebrini has moved them way up the line for where everybody thought they would be at this point. But I still don't know if they can hang on and get one of the spots. There's still a lot of big, big games left. And they've got some flaws in the roster, which they knew they were going to have before the season starts. So I think the Sharks are gettable. Utah, the team that's coming into Nashville on Saturday, I think if you look at their numbers, they're plus 18 in goal differential. They've been playing without a huge weapon of theirs for weeks. And Logan Cooley, who's a special player, that they are going to get back at some point. I think they're well coached. They're further along with some of the moves they've made. So at this point, I think Utah, I would be surprised if they don't take one of the 2 wild card spots. So for the Predators, it's one spot, I think, for the taking. And like you said, there's arguably 4 or 5 teams that are good enough to grab that spot. And I think right now, the Predators have a legit shot of those 4 or 5 teams. And I would put the Kings in there, the Kraken in there, the Sharks are in there. And so that's what, 3 or 4 teams for one spot?
The Kraken don't do it for me. I know that.
But I'm sure people in Seattle are saying, the Predators don't do it for me. We just beat the Predators on New Year's Eve or whatever that night that was.
Yeah.
So, it's a little bit of both. I think the Kraken, they also want it. That's a question, right? Like, the Flames and the Blues, and I think the Predators are kind of in that mix. It's like, do we really want this, or are we better off for the next few years if we play the long game? The Kraken are a little different. They know that the Supersonics someday might come back. They know that they ask a lot of their season ticket holders. Like, they've had great atmospheres, but they got a taste of it a couple years ago when they beat the Avalanche in the playoffs. They haven't been back. You know, they've been building for a few years. They want the really good team. I think they might be more inclined to sort of stay in the race. So I think that means something. But I agree with you. They're not on paper a team that wows you with anybody that they have.
The Jets, your submission into this list, I think they're the most intriguing just because they are not in a position, I don't think, to take that step back. They've got a lot of veteran players. Kyle Connor, Mark Scheifele, yeah. Connor Hellebuck.
They just re-signed a couple of these guys.
Right. They're an older team. They're a slow team. They just won the President's Trophy last season. They could become, I want to say, the fifth President's Trophy winner to miss the playoffs the following season. There's no margin for error there. So I am curious to see what the Jets do because they're not in a position to try to add, to try to get back in this race. They are going to have to count on their big guns to get them back in this race. Hellebuck missed some time earlier this season. He's still the reigning MVP. Connor and Scheifele, two of the most dynamic forwards in the NHL. And then, question mark?
Well, that's what sunk them to this point is they're not getting anything from their non-star guys.
Yes.
It's been a black hole. And, of course, they had to endure without Hellebuck for a while, who keeps them afloat. And at that being said, I still wouldn't write them off. If they can get a second or third line going somewhere, like you said, I think they're committed to trying to make it this year. That's what their plan was going in. They don't really look like a team that can sell at this point because of some of these signings they just made. They just re-upped with Kyle Connor, for example. So you're going to turn around and tell Kyle Connor that you're out, you're going to rebuild? I don't think that's how they're going to. I think they'll just try to regroup and make the most of the last 30-some-odd games. I still think that they're a dangerous team.
The Predators are back in action tomorrow night against the Ottawa Senators. Puck drop at 7, pregame at 6, right here on 102.5 The Game. Of course, you can watch the game as well with Willie Donick and the crew on FanDuel Sports Network as well. That'll do it for us this week. We'll be back next week with more Predators coverage for you. Of course, you can always get your fix of Predators coverage on D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick every weekday from 3 to 6 here on 102.5 The Game. On behalf of Willie Donick, I'm Adam Vingan. This is Preds Insiders 102.5 The Game.